listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Episode 235 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Retroid.
This week, we are talking about the joy that is Spark Joy, aka the, was it Marie Kondo technique, aka Marie Kondo, aka decluttering the heck out of your house or abode in general.
And yeah, obviously this has kind of taken hold of social media.
It seems, due to the new Netflix TV series, yeah, which Marie Kondo's got, where she goes about America transforming the lives of people through the power of decluttering, essentially. I mean, she's a self-styled tidying expert. The reason we know she exists is not because of that Netflix series, which apparently is how everybody else has learned of her existence currently, and then all the clickbait articles that have since surfaced online. It is, we know about it because of Gilmore Girls and the extra season, the sort of like kind of post main series season that Netflix did a couple of years ago, where Mrs. Gilmore, you know, Senior Gilmore, she starts the process of Spark Joy herself for her home after her husband dies, because they have a lot of things. I actually researched it a bit, and then last year bought Marie Kondo's like original book, which was purely really about tidying. So like the ideal way to actually obviously tidy your house. But she also then wrote a second book, which was called Spark Joy, where she talked really about the process of getting rid of your things that you don't love anymore. You know, so that you actually have the room to tidy in the first place.
I mean, there is something, I mean, especially in geekdom, there is something about collecting sets of stuff.
Mm.
And it's,
yeah, I'm just feeling personally attacked, so go on.
But I mean, like the amount of DVDs that people have, or books, or video games, and sometimes even just like completing a collection just to have a collection complete, rather than, you know, actually buying stuff that you want.
Yeah.
So you feel like it's almost like a chore to get, say, for example, every single Marvel film, despite the fact that there are several that are just kind of a bit naff and that are just going to sit on your shelf collecting dust.
Yeah. I think, and we've not ever fully really decluttered things since Paul and I moved in together many, 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 many years ago.
Partly to do with the mentality of we need to collect all the stuff.
Yeah, but I'm kind of going past that phase other than for Supernatural Pops, which they will stop making them at some point. It's pretty much guaranteed. But for now, I will collect them. But at the same time, we had like, well, we've started the Spark Joy process, basically. We did start it up before New Year's, and it's split up into, I think, some like five or six different groups of things. And the first group you deal with, so rather than room, it's like categories of stuff. So the first stuff we dealt with was clothes and shoes. Got through that lot. I ended up taking five bags of clothes to charity, along with a bag of shoes, big black bags. And then the next category you handle is books. And we haven't gone past any of the categories at the moment because books was a lot of work. And we currently have 12 boxes of books that we do need to take to a local charity shop.
And obviously we've gone through each of them and been like, do I want this anymore?
Does this spark joy? Some of them did at one point, and many of them did not anymore.
I think the important thing is it's okay to let go.
Yeah. Sentimental items is the last category you deal with in the Spark Joy process. But I know that even within that, there's a lot of stuff I'm holding on to, not because necessarily brings me joy, but because of out of a sense of obligation. And actually, I've started, like, this Christmas was the first time I really felt, did not feel that sense of obligation about holding on to things. I got a couple of NAF presents, and I was just kind of like, well, there's no point trying to get these returned, but you know what? They're not going to be in the house for much longer. Like, if you want to give me, I mean, because I think over the years, especially, we've had so many gifts between us that have been like, well, you didn't really think about that. Like, and it's fine that they weren't expensive, but it was just kind of like, well, they're actually not of much use to us. And actually, we already have like a dozen of these because people have felt obligated to get us gifts and blah, blah. In fact, the whole being wary of actually loading people up with stuff led to me doing a slightly alternative Christmas present this year for a lot of friends and family, whereby I gave people an adventure card, which laid out that they could go on an adventure with me, so long as they gave me at least a week's notice, and then I would organise the adventure, and then we would embark on it.
To be honest, that was actually quite a good hit with people.
Yeah, people are actually quite surprised at it and quite touched.
Quite nobody's, excited as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, nobody's actually cashed in yet. And if anyone
it's still
tries,
the beginning of the year.
It's still the beginning of the year. There's still plenty of time. People might be waiting for more seasonal weather as the temperature drops this week. The reason I did that was because I was kind of like, well, these are people that I would actually, you know, if the opportunity for an adventure came up, actually, I would want to go on an adventure with them anyway.
It's kind of a gift to yourself.
You say gift to yourself, but it means everyone gets to have, hopefully, an enjoyable experience, a memorable, enjoyable experience that allows people to reconnect and remember why we're, you know, why we love each other with family, or actually, you know, why we've got, you know, why we love each other with friends, you know.
So I think there is a tendency when you kind of buy somebody like a book or a DVD or whatnot, and it's
a
like...
a toiletry set.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, this is for you to go enjoy by yourself type thing. And it's just kind of like, okay, thanks.
So
I mean, anything that, you know, kind of I have wanted during the year, I've pretty much been able to get for myself anyway.
Yeah.
So... and I think there's a certain sense of shame when it comes to, like, vouchers at Christmas.
Yeah.
So people were like, oh, well, you know, you have to have something to open. And I was like, that's all well and good, but, I mean, if it's something that I'm going to go, yay, thank you, then that's obviously very... this is really sounding rather... what's the word? Ungrateful?
But at the same time, it's the thing is, everyone's got limited space, unless, of course, you're some, I don't know, multi-millionaire or something with a huge-ass house or apartment. Everyone's got limited space, and when you fill it with things that you don't necessarily like, but you're keeping out of some weird sense of obligation because it was a gift.
Or because you bought it for a high price.
Yeah. Or it's rare or something. Obviously, it doesn't do anything. It just sits there in your house. And certainly with British houses that are post, I suppose, in a way, 1930s built. So anything certainly built from like the 70s, 60s onwards has very limited storage space built in to the property.
Yeah.
So you have nowhere but surfaces quite often, or rickety flat pack to put these things in. So you've got these things actually a lot of the time out, and they're just collecting dust. They're in a way they're a dust trap. They're, if you're in a damper part of the country like Cornwall, they're a mold trap. And actually they make the house unhealthy, and perhaps, you know, untidy to the extent that actually maybe, so that's what I've been feeling until we started this, it impacts on your mental health a bit. It makes you feel down that you've just got this mess surrounding you. And I'm not saying that we've had like piles of magazines or something on the floor, like the worst image of like people who've got a genuine chronic hoarding problem where they find it genuinely difficult to get rid of stuff. Because the thing is that I've got rid of a whole load of stuff, and actually I felt better for it. And I'm going to feel even better for it once we finished it and then we have enough room to move around to rethink.
Not that we don't have enough
room. But to move around furniture and fixings and furniture and stuff so that we can
mental space.
And so we can redecorate, because we've never actually had like a really big like rejig of the house. Because my grandmother used to own it until she passed away, for which many years we were her carers. And since she's passed, we've not really done much with the house. I think the only thing we've seriously dealt with is the master bedroom. We made small attempts to do little bits here and there downstairs, but nothing of magnitude that's really made it feel like it's our space. But we've got all these things, so you can't just easily go and make it your space, because there's actually so much stuff you can't actually move anything around to make space to reimagine and redecorate and refurnish. If any of that makes sense.
it's like with our house, it's say circa 1930s. Or in an ex-council house.
Yeah.
Three bedroom. But yeah, there's virtually no built-in storage at all. There's a cupboard under the stairs, and that's it. My approach to that has been to in our main room, the walls are more or less coated in bookcases from Argos, because they were about 13, 14 centimeters deep. So they didn't take too much space, but they're big enough for games, DVDs, books, most things like that. So we've got those piled up on the walls up to the ceiling in our main room. But the problem with my hobby has always been in electronics takes a lot of space.
Yeah.
So of course that's, as covered previously, that's why when we were offered a shed, I jumped at the chance. I said, that's a whole extra room. We've got no storage. So this would be great. I will use that, and that will be my lab. And I will store things in it, and I will call it George. So, that was. But I've got lots of stuff that I've simply not got the space to display.
Yeah.
Or use. So,
I've got my Raspberry Pi's been sitting in a box for ages, because actually I just haven't had the space to really get it out and have it kind of hosted in a space permanently so that I can tinker with it when I want to.
Yeah, my approach with that initially was I got one of those tablet keyboards, tablet case with built-in USB keyboards. I got one of those, and I pretty much just turned it inside out. So it was like a wedge shape, and then put the Pi inside that and hooked up the keyboard and, cut a hole for an HDMI cable and all that kind of thing. So, I could use a Pi as a mini, self-contained computer. And that, that was okay for a while. And then, of course, the tinkering got out of hand.
Yeah. I mean, because the thing is that the main thing I want to do with the Pi is like mess around with all the pins and stuff, so that I can get some interesting stuff going on with like hardware and that. But I haven't had the space to do it. But if we finish, we will finish decluttering. I'm determined to finish decluttering this year. Apart from anything, the amount of stuff we have in the house is at an uncomfortable level that we would like to have a pet, but. Can't really have a pet safely with the amount of stuff piled up on shelves and things. It's too much for a pet to break or to get lost in or to get hurt in, really. So yeah, there's that too.
I've had pets all along, so I've generally just kind of worked around.
Or the pets have already been used to the scenario.
Yeah. and it's just, you know, cat tries to get up on the shelf, you chase cat. And whenever cat tries to do that, you keep chasing, you know, cat away, and cat will get the idea.
But there again, we know what cats are like.
So malicious.
Yeah.
As soon as you're on the room, they're up there wiping their asses on the surfaces.
Yeah. I mean, our cat who do that has the blessing that she's too large, not fat. She's just too big to do any of that, so she doesn't bother.
Fair.
But yeah, every now and then it'll be, where's that meowing coming from? Holy shit, how did you get up there? And please come down without destroying everything.
And shelving units, I mean, because you have a theory, don't you, that the more shelving units they have, the more you feel like you need to fill them up.
We have,
and then you run out of space, so you get more shelving units.
Yeah.
Then you just get more stuff to fill them up, and then you get more shelving units, and it's a big vicious cycle.
Pretty much. That's pretty much my theory. I mean, we've got a in the living room, we've got built-in shelves that my late grandfather and my dad built when my grandparents originally moved into the house, and they are deep. They are many, and they're not. And they're so big that they almost suck the energy out of the room, like, because they're just so cavernous, and it's not nice. It doesn't make you feel good about the space. You've got less space to put things like photos or art. It makes the room smaller. Actually,
yeah. My mother's approach to storage and, you know, storing things is the reason why I don't have deep, you know, shelves and stuff like that. Because what she'll do is that she'll think, well, I can fit, you know, two layers of DVDs or books, or, you know, I can put DVDs, books, you know, whatever, and put ornaments in front of them. And I said, oh, that's great. What if I want that out? And it's a mammoth pin in the arse to move everything out of the way without knocking something off. I mean, just so you can get in and, you know, get to whatever it is behind there, even if you can remember what the hell is there.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. So, I mean, we've got, kind of several, like, shelving units with, like, DVDs that are double-stacked, or books that are double-stacked, or video games that are double-stacked.
We did have books double-stacked. We don't now.
Yeah. And it was a case of, like, going through them and being like, oh, I forgot we even had that. And that's kind of worrying, you know, because you're not even valuing the stuff that you've got anymore.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
sorry.
Some of the bookcases I've got, I'm not using the full, you know, space that I could, because I've got single cassette size. Cassette tapes there, you know, for old games.
Ah, yeah.
And I could very easily do them, you know, two layer. So, you know, put another layer of tapes in front of them. But then I wouldn't know what was behind them.
Mm.
So I don't. And she, oh, you could store double there. It's like, yeah, but then I wouldn't bloody know what was behind it. After a while, anyway. You know, my memory isn't that
bad. I mean, the other thing that we've found is that when you've got a shelf and you basically really pack stuff in, it means that it blocks airflow, which also means that when the cold comes and when the damp comes,
increases the risk of stuff going moldy.
Yeah.
There were two casualties due to the volume of books stored in this living room. And a moment of silence for my massive Oxford English Dictionary and my massive Oxford English Thesaurus. Moment of silence. Thank you. For they had succumbed to the mould. They perhaps did so in the line of duty to protect all other books in this room. Because nothing else was anywhere near, if at all. No, actually, no, nothing was at all mouldy, but the thesaurus and dictionary had laid down their lives for the sake of the many books that we will retain and the many books that shall be going
to
charity.
They just sort of jumped in the way and go...
It looked like it. It really did look like it.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, bloody hell.
Yeah.
But mind you, books are bad for that.
Yeah.
Just, remembering that you bought Supernatural Seasons 1 to 13 on Blu-ray, which is that takes up less space than the DVD versions.
Yeah. So we're going to be donating the DVD versions that I have had to some friends.
Good God. Yeah, that has reminded me. I had the entire run of Star Trek The Next Generation.
What, in those cassette tapes?
On videotape.
Oh, blimey, that must have tucked up like a wall.
It did. So when you know when they released them in you know like Blu-ray packs or in DVD packs, it's fucking godsend.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, kind of looking over at the DS9.
Also has quite a few seasons of DS9 and original Trek, and yeah, just because they got put in bags and boxes and you know stuck up in the loft, and then when we ran out of space. You know, to store some things in the loft and go, oh, why don't we get rid of those? They're videotapes. Couldn't believe the amount of space they took up.
Yeah. Thing is, though, is that, I mean...
Unfortunately, they all got chucked because no charity shops would take them.
Mm. I mean, also presumably to do with the fact that, videotapes, how many of them are actually going to be in decent watching condition now? I suppose it depends on how they've been stored, but...
I found magnetic media to be... more resilient than I expected.
Oh, really?
Both computer tapes, discs, audio
cassette tapes.
When it comes to videotapes, I think it may be more of a factor how many times they were played. Because every time you play them, tiny bit of the magnetic charge off the tape in order to read the signal. And I picked up a TV VCR before Christmas, and it came with a box of kids' videotapes. Quite a few Disney, you know, that kind of thing. There was a Barbie Princess one. That's been my test to record over things.
Okay.
And I think there was a copy of The Emperor's New Groove, which I've never actually seen.
Actually quite entertaining, isn't it?
Could you watch it?
I've watched it maybe about a third of the way through, but that more or less because the only place I've got a video recorder, tape player in our entire territory, you know, shares Retroid, is in the shed. To watch a Disney cartoon all the way through, but I thought this isn't bad, but I always preferred the Pixar stuff personally. But
fair,
yeah. Watching because I was looking through the tier, he won some one or two Pixar and the Barbie Princess one. I thought, yeah, that'll be the one that I'll just put a piece of tape over the top and record over and test. And the difference between the quality of the the Barbie, because it's I think it's CG, this particular Barbie one. Anyway, it's Barbie. But the quality of the image that was on the tape paled into comparison with what I recorded. In my computer or my Steam stream box, and those looked a lot better, a lot higher quality than the image of the Barbie thing. And of course that would just be because its age and the number of times it was played. They degrade.
Hmm.
Kids these days won't understand.
I mean, nowadays with stuff like Netflix and Amazon Prime and whatnot, and even to a certain extent like Google Play Store, you kind of don't need as much physical media. I mean, it's kind of part of the reason why HMV is...
suffering.
Yeah.
Again.
Well, yeah, again. And that's because I went in before Christmas looking for something very specific and they didn't have it.
I have a feeling that they suffered a bit over Christmas because they were already obviously in trouble and they couldn't get stock for a lot of stuff. Because obviously in order to get stock for things, you've got to be in good credit. And if anyone who's actually a supplier is starting to think, am I going to get my money back on this if I sell it to you? They won't supply. I mean, that's where games started. The last time they went into administration kind of suffered was because nobody would sell stock to them.
Yeah, and it's just a vicious circle when that happens. Yeah. But you'll be pleased because I went in looking for Supernatural Season 13 on DVD.
And they didn't have it?
Nope. Or rather, they did if I wanted to buy the Season 1 through 13.
Ah.
And he's like, nah, I think you're fine.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah, I don't think they've had individual seasons for a while.
A smattering of the earlier ones, and they definitely had like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 separately.
Ours didn't. Went looking. It was just box sets. But,
I used to be, and again, I don't know how much of it is because there was bugger all on telly. So, and you know, anything that presented itself, you would have to grab. And then, you know, you could watch it whenever you wanted. Whether the snooker championship was on or not. Thanks, BBC Two. I used to buy box sets. I used to buy individual episodes as soon as they came out on tape. I'd have, you know, seasons of stuff. Like the full run of Babylon 5 and VHS, you know, things like that. And I'd have stuff that I'd record off TVs, just, you know, onto separate tapes. So I would have, you know, like episodes 1 to 6 of, you know, whatever sitcom or, you know, comedy series that, you know, a comedian, you know, had done. You know, things like that, you know, the half-hour slot type. And I used to have, you know, piles and drawers of those, and I would catalogue them. And then when it came to DVD, I've not so much. I've got maybe about 2 shelves. Not sets of shelves, literally 2 shelves.
Oh, wow.
Of, you know, DVDs, because most of the time, you know, I just want to see something the once. You know, on streaming, or it'll be on, you know, like Virgin, or, you know, whatever. Or, you know, of course, now it may well be on Netflix or Amazon. So I don't feel as attached to the physical media. So, you know, that's definitely up to space.
I mean, TV is very different from film in that respect, because obviously you can get into TV like mid-season and be like, oh, I wonder what it was, you know, kind of like previous seasons and whatnot. And you can go out and you can, you know, buy them or stream them now. But, movies, obviously, you know, they're kind of set to be standalone things. You either see them or you don't.
Yeah. Unless they're a part two.
True.
I feel like now's kind of the point where it's like, if I really, really like something that I've watched on a on-demand service, I will try to get hold of the physical copy.
But it has to be something that you really, really enjoy.
That would be Longmire currently, but actually it's really hard to buy physical copies of Longmire in the UK. So, yeah. Like, I've been watching it legitimately, but I've been paying for episodes via Google Play, with, of course, the knowledge that they might lose the license someday and no longer have the right for me to access the content.
And that is the big downside to cloud services like that.
Yeah. It's like with the books thing. I mean, okay, I suppose we haven't mentioned the controversy over Marie Kondo and books because
everybody's going like, oh,
you're only allowed 30 books, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, she happens to only keep 30 books because that's as many books as sparks joy for her.
Hmm. Yeah. And that's the point I've been making with people who have been, well, what, you know, only 30 books. It's no, she doesn't say that. It's not you know, you can't have more.
Yeah.
It's if you're collecting for the hell of it.
But
then,
you really need to think about it. And the thing is that I'm given to charity all my Harry Potter novels because I haven't read them in a long time. And while I still like the franchise, it still doesn't spark joy as much as it used to. And if I was going to reread now, I think I'd want a digital copy. Yeah. I'm giving my Lord of the Rings books to charity because they don't spark joy. I've never finished reading them. I really hate the Lord of the Rings novels because they're not novels. They're weird ass historical accounts written in this really pompous way. I'd much rather read The Hobbit, which I've kept.
Mm.
who else? Oh, and while I've read all of them, at some point, I'm never going to get the chance to reread them, and I am giving away all of my Terry Pratchett's, bar The Amazing Maurice and His Educated Rodents, because I was lucky enough to get Mr. Pratchett to sign that whilst he was still alive.
Mm.
And that sparks joy. But yeah. The other books, low-key spark joy, it's not a really big feeling. I was glad to have read them. More glad to actually make space to be able to breathe in my own space.
Yeah.
Are the Gish Coffee books?
The Gish Coffee books are on the bottom. They are safe. Cool. I would not give away the Gish Coffee books. They spark joy, Paul. They spark joy.
Yeah, goddammit,
I didn't see them where they were. That's all.
Because everything got jumbled around whilst I was trying to
That's absolutely fine.
Our graphic novel collection is pretty much non-existent, though, after Dean Spark Joy.
I've got a couple, but...
Literally only a couple. Yeah. Like, obviously we used to host Commonwealth Graphic Novel Group years ago, and I've just really, really gone off the format. Like, the only thing in the past year that I've wanted to read that is a comic has been Check Please. And that's because it has a storyline that actually doesn't really get covered in most regular comics and stuff, even if you're looking at something indie. So, it was quite funny. We let my middle brother have first pick of what we were going to get rid of.
Yeah.
He may have gone back to my parents' place with two Sports Direct sized bags. You know, for the trade to graphic novels. My parents were so happy with me. So, so happy. It was hilarious.
That's great. What have you done?
I mean, to be fair, he was taking what he wanted.
Yeah, he was taking what he was interested in.
It's not like, you're like, go on, you know you want this. Go on, you know you want it.
No. I was like, if you're not interested, don't pick it. We will take it to a charity shop. It's fine. So, that happened. I don't know what's going to be like when we finally get around to the video games, though.
That is going to be tough for me.
Which is part of the kimono category. We've got a lot of stuff.
Can I just chip in with something about one of my favourite topics?
Okay.
So Nintendo are closing the Wii store. The Wii eShop.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that you literally will not be able to download things that you have purchased. So in other words, if you bought things on your Wii and you thought, oh, that's awesome, but I need to get rid of that, I'll download it another time, but I need the space back.
No.
Nintendo have heard you and they don't give a shit.
Yeah, I mean...
And for the record, any company that does this, I think is being really shitty. That includes Microsoft and Sony. Although, in Microsoft's defense, what they do is if, you know, when they remove something from a store, it tends to, it will stay on your account. You can re-download it from your own account.
You just can't buy it.
Yeah, you can't buy it again because, of course, things like Outrun Arcade, where they had the, they had a timed license for the Ferrari car and logo and, you know, all of that. So, you know, they can have a temporary license for, you know, even stuff like the soundtrack. And sometimes things will get, you know, patched out or edited. Other times it's just, you know, it's not worth a hassle. We'll remove it from the store. But you can, you know, you can re-download it.
But this is the problem of relying on digital versions. And the thing is that I saw a friend on my Facebook. I didn't bother looking into it more, but it sounded like people were sort of talking about how Microsoft might try to go download only with its next console, which, apart from, oh fuck, people who've got only really shitty internet connections trying desperately to get hold of Microsoft console games, but at the same time it's like, well, what happens, obviously, you know, when licenses lapse and stuff, because a game's worse than a book for losing access to it because of the cost that you will have put into it. Because regardless of whether or not physical media for games exists in 5 years' time, the cost of a video game still will always be way more than most books digitally. You know, so that's a serious loss of investment if the license lapses. What if you buy something that's near the end of the license lapsing and suddenly you don't have access and you're like not even a quarter of the way through the game and you wanted to complete it? I mean, obviously, under the existing system, you're fine Microsoft-wise, but other, you know, manufacturers, and that, would you be?
Yeah, and that's why I nearly linked the video. It was the Modern Retro Gamer, or Modern Vintage Gamer, I think. You know, I've linked you a few of his YouTube videos before, where he'll, you know, say, oh, you know, this is what we can do with the Switch now with Homebrew and, you know, things like that. And he was talking about the Wii, and unfortunately, yet again, it's one of those situations. This is not only Virtual Console as well. This is WiiWare.
Yeah.
And things like that. It's, you know, there are original titles which haven't been released in anything else, and then just gone. No physical copies anywhere. If you want a new copy, tough shit. And this is where companies will not look after you. And it's a sad situation now where it seems to be, once again, the only people who really care about, you know, preserving these things are what a lot of the industry would term pirates.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bad situation, and it's a bad business approach.
But also, it's kind of like a huge chunk of cultural heritage just kind of disappearing in a way that is cumulatively very destructive.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a whole load of stuff disappearing.
Well, I mean, in comparison to, obviously, previous generations, which didn't have, downloadable games at all, where you physically had to have the media there, and that media is always going to be there for you.
That you say that, I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast, but Samuel L. Jackson's, either his first film that he was in, or one of his first, isn't available anywhere.
All right.
I think it was in the late 70s. And again, I'm not saying this, you know, this is a cinematic masterpiece that he was in, but it's someone who is active in the movies today that, you know, we all know of, and one of his earliest films is simply nowhere to be seen because I think the film company went out of business.
Of course, it was on film, which is...
Yeah.
And it's before home video.
Yeah, and of course, with a lot of films, the original reels were not sold to the public, or, you know, they weren't supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, if the company or if someone doesn't keep a copy when they're probably not quite supposed to, then you're stuffed. And yeah, I did mention this before because I remember this next point. We only have the full version of Fritz Lang's Metropolis because someone nicked the reels. And they kept it in their private collection because it was just going to get thrown out. Now, imagine, if that hadn't been a physical object, we would have been screwed. We would never have seen the bits that hadn't been preserved, cut up on the editing room floor for use in another project because the original film flopped. So we wouldn't have that film. And that's the same for so much else. And when it comes to, digital books, ones that aren't, printed off, if the servers go down or if, that it's withdrawn for one reason or another, then it's gone. Especially when things like Kindles can have a remote kill switch.
Yeah.
So, oh, it's okay, I've got it on my Kindle. No, you don't.
There's so many people I've had to explain that to. When they've been horrified at how many books I'm getting rid of, it's like, oh, well, I have mine all on Kindle, and then, but like, you do realize you don't own like that stuff. That content could disappear at any time. What? It's just the amount of people that just don't realize that you're essentially you're buying the right to a temporary service. It might last a very long time, but it is still a temporary service.
Yeah, and the thing is, that situation pushes people. There's someone I know who, will buy everything on, an ebook that they can, stuff with, just because of the amount of space it takes. But what they'll do with every single purchase is the first thing they'll do is they'll remove the DRM and see if it's somewhere as a separate file. They will archive it for themselves because it could disappear at any point.
Yeah.
Does make me think that maybe like we should have like home. Well, basically, just like a, in essence, the equivalent of like a hard drive that can be shared.
But you mean home with all server? Devices.
Yeah, yeah. A home server for like and when you're kind of buying like digital copies of stuff, then it will get downloaded to your home server, which can then be distributed to your devices. So you keep that copy of it. I mean, I know there's risk of like kill switches and whatnot, but
yeah, I'm not exactly sure on the situation here, but I do know that there are national libraries, like the British Library, don't they try and keep a copy of every newspaper, every magazine?
They do try. Every book that has an ISBN.
But I don't know if they do that with digital.
I would say it's doubtful. I mean, BFIs are certainly, for instance, for film, they're the main sort of ones that kind of look after archives and stuff in the UK. America's got the National Archives.
Yeah.
That are successful to varying degrees. I'm sure they're doing not so great during the current shutdown. And also, they did manage to lose Kennedy's brain this one time. So, their success rate for holding on to stuff, I don't know what it is, but the fact that they managed to lose Kennedy's brain still irks me to this day.
And it wasn't them, but I do know that when Tutankhamun's mummy was removed during the Second World War, that they do reckon that some American troops who were supposed to be transporting it stole his penis. I'm not making that up. His mummy had a penis before the Second World War, and after it, when it was returned to the museum, it didn't.
Oh dear.
And it just why his penis? You could understand if a hand or a foot or something went missing. With moving around, but it's just that's strangely specific and unlikely to be accidental.
That's not the kind of decluttering we want going on in our house.
No, I'm quite attached to not to Tutankhamun's penis.
I think we've solved this mystery.
Inherited. But yeah, and then I think for sort of like the geek side as well, like maybe compared to people who don't collect anything, it's that underlying knowledge that maybe some of it's worth something. People who have antiques, I suppose, don't necessarily have that fear, because if they think something's vaguely potentially worth something, they'll just hold on to it anyway. But geeks will hold on to, but if you're a geek that's determined to declutter, but then you come across stuff that might be worth something, you're like, oh, should I sell this? But then spending the time necessary to sell things completely ruins the process of something like Spark Joy and just a general process of decluttering, because you're putting stuff aside that's still going to be taking up space, and it could take forever to sell these things. The whole, what was it, people who've got like a, is it like an eBay box or something, stuff that they're trying to sell on eBay, like, does the box ever truly clear?
This is where I mentioned my mother, who is a very different hoarder. She has an insane collection of Lord of the Rings tap. I mean, just multiple copies of the films on DVD and Blu-ray. You know, multiple copies of the books, figures, paintings, a Matryoshka set. She's just got
everything.
A lot of and he's got an eBay pile. It wasn't so much a pile as a danger to all the cats and us in the house. It must have been easily about 300 or 400 DVDs.
You know, I could just imagine somebody making a business out of basically taking all the stuff that you want to sell on eBay, storing it somewhere, and kind of taking a percentage of the profits.
When it sells.
Yeah.
Mm.
I can imagine that being, like, totally legit, you know, kind of
there
business.
Might be someone already doing that, to be fair. I suspect there is. eBay's been around long enough. But how big a for eBay pile?
Easily, let's see, in measurement or number?
Let's physically think about this. So measurement, compare it to a thing.
Easily as wide as and as tall, except in the opposite directions.
Uh-huh.
So as wide as tall, and you know, as tall as wide, as a full size stand up fridge freezer.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and that's not counting the ones that she's not selling, which are, you know, covering
many surfaces. The electric room.
Yes. So yeah, she is awful with everything like that, and it's just I kind of took, you know, looks at her in her room and the living room when I was growing up, and I'm not going to be like that. I mean, I've got a lot of stuff. But I will be the first to say that, but I don't. It's like I've got a pile of duplicate games that I picked up, because of course, you know, if I'm buying retro stuff, then there will usually be a copy of a game in there that I've already got. As it turns out, lots of people like a game called what's it? Bollocks, I've forgotten it now. But yeah, there was a budget Mastertronic game, and it wasn't Dizzy because it was by, you know, Mastertronic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the equivalent of finding Sega Rally with Sega Saturns, or, you know, a copy of Super Mario Brothers with an S.
Oh, blimey.
It's just, I have not set out to have even one copy of this game, and I must have about eight spread across different formats.
Wow.
And it's just, I'm not sure I want one. I had it the first time round when it was out.
Not a fan.
It was all right. It was all right. It was a slightly crap version of Gauntlet.
Hmm.
But except the characters were much bigger, and it was a bit unworkable because of that. and it was like flip screen. It was all, you know, it was all right, but I don't want that many copies of it.
Fair.
I keep wanting to call it Spawn, but it is not.
I'm going to move us on a bit. So
Clear your right to collect mini TVs.
Yes, we have seen your pictures of your mini TVs.
Can I say just quickly before we move on that the kind of behaviour of kind of collecting stuff is partly because, you know, there's this thing in the back of your head turning around saying, but what about if I want to watch it or use it or, you know, do something with it later on? You know, kind of down the road. Mm. So I can't remember who's kind of said it, but there has been like a previous theory that rich people or just the well-off, they're less attached to their stuff because they know that they could always purchase it again if they need to. Whereas poorer people think that basically they have to keep hold of stuff because it's going to be more difficult to get in the future if they did want it back.
I think that's a very definite factor, especially because with my mother who grew up with rationing just after the Second World War. So it was always, you're not throwing that out, we could use it. And I know I'm a little bit like that, but I tend to base it more on things I can, you know, I think I can use it for, rather than the, you know, she'll just keep it no matter what.
Yeah.
But I'll think, no, I can use that cable for, you know, whatever. Absolutely. Or I can adapt it.
I mean, there's probably thousands or millions of houses in this country with, you know, kind of cables that they're never going to use again. Stuff like SCART leads and
old mobile phone chargers.
Yeah, mobile phone chargers and all sorts of stuff like that because they've kind of put it away in the drawer somewhere, being like, oh, I might need that in the future. As like,
yeah,
you won't. Trust me, you won't, because, I mean, by the time you'll think you'll need it, you'll have upgraded and they won't be using that technology anymore.
Yeah. The number of people who kept, my mother wanted to keep a whole collection of audio cassettes.
Mm.
And, you know, because they were expensive. And then I pointed out to her, she doesn't have a player. There isn't a player in the house. Wow. Well, there is now, because, you know, as an example, in, you know, with those, you know, the mini TVs, one of them is a, you know, combined TV radio and cassette recorder. That, you know, that was, you know, one of the things at that point, you know, just stick as many things as we can in this box.
Yeah.
I thought we were still doing that. Mobile phones.
In a way, but yeah. And it's, yeah, no. So I had to point that out to her, and she's okay, we'll get rid of them. It's like, good, because you're not going to be listening to, you know, whatever the hell this is. But yeah, she's the type who will do that. You know, it's all about what I paid for it in the first place, and I'm, well, it's all very fine, you know, oh God, I spent, you know, X amount of pounds on this, but now it's useless. I don't keep it because it was expensive in the first place. I might just get rid of it, I'll flog it on, you know, eBay, give it to charity, you know, that kind of thing. I can't, there are very few things that I can see an inherent point in, unless I think, no, I want that because it's something I'm going to use, or, you know, I intend to use, and I know it would cost me more to replace.
But yeah,
that's one of the defining things. If I know I can get it cheap, then I'm far less bothered.
And kind of looking at things specifically geek wise, I think merchandise for Star Wars also has a lot to answer for, because you know, everybody thinks that all of their, you know, old collectibles and whatnot are probably worth something, and it's like, it's probably not. You know, that those figures that are sat on the shelf for the past 15 years, that, you know, from some obscure movie in the, you know, 90s, they're probably not worth what you think they are.
I always point out, because, again, you know, my mother is, of, you know, very much of the, oh, you know, this could be worth something.
Hmm.
Something is only worth as much as someone else is willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
There is no inherent physical attribute which will make it worth more. If no one wants it, then it's not going to be worth anything.
No.
And you see that a lot in, you know, various, you know, collecting markets, and, you know, especially the, you know, retro gaming, where it's, oh no, this is worth £40. And then someone else sees that and go, well, all these other copies are for £40. I'll put it up for a 99 pence start. And then when it does sell, it'll go for a fiver.
Hmm.
Which I have seen, and I have been the beneficiary of. to the point of almost apologizing to the, you know, to the seller, because, you know, well, you obviously thought this was going to go for more, but it turns out that all the ones that you know, all the other ones that you were seeing, you know, fly past, the reason they were flying past is because they just keep getting relisted when they don't sell.
Hmm. That's true.
And, you know, the kind of things I'm, you know, well, it'll be, you know, with YouTube as well. The kind of things that I'm interested in buying are the things which spark joy. They're either ones that I had in the first place and I really miss not having them anymore, or I always wanted, or I just want to use it. You know, I don't want to own it just for the sake of having it. I want it because I enjoy having that thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I've still got too much tat, so...
Are you saying that at some point you will probably end up doing the Spark Joy, or will you be like, no?
But one thing I think is important to remember, because obviously everyone else is talking about it because she's got a Netflix series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, that's kind of really making waves, because everyone's like, oh my gosh. Like, it's a lifestyle thing, but it's a thing, and it's unusual, and oh my gosh, you know, Westerners are really not used to being told to declutter something, people from the UK or,
well,
the US.
That's because, you know, capitalism. Is all about kind of accumulating wealth
and stuff. But, yeah, like, I feel I haven't watched the series because I read the book first, and I've already started my Spark Joy process, and I'm worried that if I watch the series, my interpretation of what I've read from the book I'll feel that it's wrong if I watch it in the series until, you know, like, before I finish the process. Like, I don't want something like that to wreck the flow that we've got. If that makes sense.
I think it does make sense, but by the same token, I mean, what you get from the book is going to be equally as valid as what Marie Kondo is meaning.
Yeah, but I don't want anything to confuse how I've got it set up in my mind and my very detailed list of what we get rid of.
That's fair.
I say get rid of. What we analyse next for Spark Joy.
Yeah. Which will be, what, DVDs and games? What?
No, Paperworks next.
Paperworks. Okay, yeah.
That's a bit trickier on the Spark Joy process. Like, you know, like things like birth certificates and that, you kind of need to hold on to.
Yeah, absolutely. Any important documents that don't exactly have an expiry date.
Yeah. But other bits of paperwork, well, now. But then we got to make sure that sentimental stuff gets left till we get to the sentimental section at the end of the entire process.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we've got time for what we've been up to this episode.
No, we don't.
But has anyone got a recommendation of something new that they've watched without going into too much detail?
Can I go first?
Yep.
Yeah.
There are two things.
Mm-hmm.
A long-term friend of mine decided to treat me, you know, as to a little like post-Christmas, you know, thing, and went to see Bumblebee in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a non-monstrously shit Transformers film.
Oh my gosh, we've been avoiding it because we just weren't sure.
All the other ones, hand on heart, I thought had been crap. This is quite perfectly watchable.
Okay.
And written by a woman, and I think possibly directed by a woman as well.
Question.
Hmm?
Is it perfectly watchable because of how shit the previous ones have been, or is it perfectly watchable as in if the others didn't exist, then this would be kind of okay?
This would be kind of okay if it wasn't for the others.
Okay.
So it's kind of elevated because it's nowhere near as shit.
Hmm.
But one of the things, and yeah, I have to admit, as was shown in the, you know, one of the trailers for it, and everyone was going, "Oh my god," when they saw it.
Hmm.
Yes, there are several minutes of it set on Cybertron using the original 1980s designs from the, you know, the cartoons, toys, and comics. Less so the toys, because as I said before, you know, the original toy designs were not much like they look like in, you know, in the cartoon series.
Yeah.
But seeing the original look of Optimus Prime, Starscream, and Soundwave, Ravage, you know, all these you know, different Autobots and Decepticons. It looking as I wanted them to look if I'd been told. You know, if 11-year-old me was told, hey, there'll be several $100 million film, you know, live action film of Transformers made, that's kind of what I imagined, and it looked awesome. And you could tell what was going on. So it clearly nice. Wasn't made by
Bay.
Michael Bay, that was it, thank you. I think he was a producer on it.
It'd probably have to be.
You could tell because it just made more sense. even though I had the feeling when I was, because it's set in the mid-80s.
Okay.
And I had a feeling that some of the odd 70s at times.
Okay.
And I thought, you know, that doesn't look like it belongs. That looks like, you know, something you'd see in, you know, that 70s show, which, you know, I've only seen a few episodes of. But, you know, that looks a little bit out of style. But, you know, the rest of the time, it's fine. And there are no lingering shots of tits and ass. So, bonus. You can tell it's not by Michael Bay. So I can recommend that if it comes across on Netflix or whatever, you know, to watch. Previous ones have been, haven't they? So I would recommend it's perfectly watchable if you've got, you know, a bit of an inkling for Transformers, if you like them. The other thing in watching, because I'm going to not talk about this series that we, you know, we've finished watching 7 years of, because that's more of a conversation. We started watching She-Ra.
Oh yeah, the new one.
The new one on Netflix.
Mm.
And it's pretty damn good. So, you know, all these, oh no, look, the characters look different. It's like, yeah, but the characters never looked that great in the original She-Ra and the original He-Man cartoons.
Yeah.
They were full of stock animation. And one thing which really just, you know, nail in the coffin, watched an episode of Star Trek The Animated Series, and it must have been done by the same animation company that did, you know, went on to make He-Man and She-Ra. And there was a Planet of the Women episodes. And they all look like She-Ra. And it's just, this is weird. This is it's like bloody hell, they've been using the same stock design at the time they get to She-Ra.
Can I talk about what I've been, more than one thing that I'm recommending at the moment?
Okay.
No. Yeah, go on.
Michelle Obama's autobiography, Becoming.
Oh!
I've been reading that. I'm about almost halfway through. I had to stop for a bit because, I suppose people don't realise it, but, I mean, herself and even Obama, they're not from incredibly, incredibly privileged backgrounds. It was good that they managed to get into, like, Ivy League schools for, like, college, university. But, especially Michelle Obama, she's from quite a sort of working class background in Chicago. And while she was growing up, like, around the time that she'd started seeing Obama, a lot of shit happened in her 20s, in her sort of mid-20s. She lost a lot of good people in her life. She lost her best, one of her best friends. And then not long after, she lost her father. And her best friend was obviously about the same age as her. Father was only 55. And, like, I sort of cried when she talked about losing a friend, and then I kept reading, but then when she lost her dad, I was just like, okay, I have to stop now. I have to cry for a bit, and I read on a bit after that, but it was, I haven't read a biography or anything like that for a while, but this is the first one which I've read that's made me cry. Basically. It's good. It's good. She seems to be a very... I mean, she seems like... it's weird being a Brit observing American politics. And obviously, like, during Obama's two presidential terms, like, America seemed pretty okay. Can't say the same now. But, like... Nope. But, like, you had a... if you were a Brit that was quite... you know, not an ass, basically, you thought the Obamas were pretty okay, you know, and actually somebody like Michelle Obama, actually, regardless of which country you live in, for women, she's a very aspirational, very inspiring figure, you know.
Yeah.
She worked hard to get where she is, studied hard, worked through the awkwardness of networking, because networking, man. And made her way in the world, but acknowledged at the same time in the course of it that her parents sacrificed a lot in order for her to do that. Just very humbling. It's a good read, but prepare for some real feels at times, because whoa. So that's my rec at the moment.
Okay. Well, I know we've just finished watching a series on Netflix called Sex Education, starring Asa Butterfield and Gillian Anderson. And that is quite a interesting series. It's kind of mostly drama. But, it basically revolves around the son of a sex therapist. And
oh, God.
He basically, you know, kind of in school, trying to keep his head down and whatnot, until he strikes a deal with somebody in school to open a sex clinic and basically help all these kids with kind of sexual issues and problems. So it's a very kind of sex positive series, and kind of looking at things in a good way. So it's not like, oh, you know, you're underage, you shouldn't be having sex or anything like that. It's more like, you've got this issue, and you know, you've got these other things in your life, and maybe that one sexual issue is something to do with, you know, this thing that's happening or that thing that's happening.
But it's quite good how it's written in that, because it's not just the problems of that, it's like there's a lot of conversation about things like consent from all parties involved. It's refreshing to see such conversations happening in still a humorous or down-to-earth way, depending obviously on the situation involved. I wouldn't say it's always realistic, but it's far more fun to watch than season 3 of the original Skins.
I have never seen Skins, to be honest.
Skins is an interesting one because the first 2 seasons were heavily influenced by input from actual young people. And then you can tell in season 3 they stopped doing that.
I mean, also telling the fact that, you know, the first couple of seasons of Skins, you actually had actors that actually kind of came out of it and kind of done stuff else.
Elsewhere.
Other stuff like Nicholas Hoult. I mean, I know he was in other stuff before Skins as well,
but
like About a Boy and whatnot. But yeah,
took him further.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Sex Education recommended. That's a 8 episode series.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm kind of. I don't know if it's been renewed or not. I kind of hope there's going to be another.
What's that?
Sex Education. Like, I'm kind of hoping they might have another season.
Another thing is the fact that it's British.
Oh yes.
So it's none of this kind of American school stuff, which obviously there's a lot of in the media in general.
Is this Skins or Sex Education that you're talking about?
Sex Education.
So I had no idea it was British.
Yeah. And I think I can't remember where it was that I read it, but it seems like Netflix are meant to be kind of pumping more money into British productions as well. So obviously they've got a lot of, you know, kind of Netflix original stuff from, you know, America, Canada, you know, stuff like Japan and Korea and whatnot.
It was only released in like the past week or so. But yeah, it's genuinely good. Go watch. Hope that it gets another season. I would say though that the setting and the way that the school's done and stuff, it's kind of probably going to be more familiar to US viewers because everyone wears home clothes at school here and at this in the show, and it only seemed to have sort of 16 to 18 year olds in the school, so it was more of a British high school, because obviously you do get high schools in the UK, they're just few and far between, and so it kind of like had a slight high school setup basically, but how it tends to happen in the few UK places that do have them basically. Anyway, I think that's enough for this episode. Thank you for listening. We have been
Paul Wood, Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
Yeah, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blewett.
And thanks for listening. I'm Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find Nerds Assemble on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. We're also on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast, and we're also on Instagram as Nerds Podcast. Episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher, and even Spotify. I think we're kicking about on Pocket Casts too. So, you know, if you've come to us from our website, you can find us on popular players. And notes for this episode are going to be over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're still looking at moving the actual site at some point. I can't say that there's going to be outage anytime soon, but we will warn you when there might be a chance of outage. So you might want to at least follow some a form of social media. Good night.
Good night.
Sorry, so you ordered that.